This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
It was just like a home. You know what I mean? An extended family, really, you know? They'll still come back with the different things that happened there and how much they enjoyed working there.
Looking back on it, it was just this kind of magical emporium that had everything. For us, it was always there. We didn't question it. It was part of the town. It was part of the makeup of the town. And we were glad to have it.
We had to compete, not only from a Yall point of view, we had a city beside us, which was developing probably even quicker.
There were good times and there were bad times, but most of them, I think, probably more good than bad.
Merrick's department store stands in the centre of Yall Town, just a few short yards away from the historic clock gate. It served the people of Yall for centuries, surviving and thriving during times of war, famine and economic austerity. It employed hundreds of people throughout its history and played a significant role in the development of Yall. Merrick's staff remember the store fondly, with strong friendships and many marriages coming from their time there. This one-hour programme will hope to capture some of its fabled history and former glory. The sign above Merrick's department store states that the business was established by the Merrick family in 1580. No records remain relating to the Merrick family from that time, but architect and historian David Kelly, who has researched the family, has traced the Merrick name back to the 17th century.
We do have an early mention of a John Merrick, who was appointed collector of customs in 1647. And it's clear from the records in the church that the Merrick family that survived here up to the early years of the 20th century were descended from him. Now, whether that ties him back to the early date on the building at the end of the 16th century is difficult to say. Especially that period in the 1580s was just in the middle of the Desmond Rebellion. The Earl of Desmond had rebelled. The whole of Munster was in a state of war, and he had taken Yall in the years previously, and Yall had suffered a lot of damage. So any possibility of survival of record from that time is definitely gone. And as the maxim in history is, the absence of evidence should never be taken as evidence of absence. So it could well be that Merrick was here or in the vicinity. This appointment in 1647 is an important appointment. The collector of customs got paid as a percentage of what he collected. So these were good jobs. And usually they were given out to people who were well known and trusted. So I suspect he didn't just arrive the day before.
The first records still in existence that locate Merrick's on North Main Street come from the 19th century.
The first one that gives me an address is Samuel Merrick, and he's a wool comber and dyer in North Main Street in 1824. And I suspect that he is probably in the building that we now call the Read and Write Shop. His son Jeremiah then is called a woolen draper, and we get an address for him in 83, and that's in 1845. But that same Jeremiah had obviously started to do some better than maybe his predecessors, because he's also listed as a ship owner. But it's interesting that Jeremiah had to be a good businessman, because he was now growing a business in a time when the town was not growing. We were coming up to the famine in the 1840s and all the problems that that brought, and then following that, a huge decline in population. The town was going down, but yet Merrick's department store was growing. And it was a true department store, which is interesting for a small town like Yall.
Advertisements from this period give an indication of the wide range of goods on sale.
His advertisement, which I have here from 1867, he says, J. Merrick begs to announce that his establishment is well supplied with very superior stock of goods in every department, etc. He says, pianos on sale and for hire. Now, pianos are quite a big piece of equipment to keep in shops, in a shop in Yale. The customers for pianos had to be reasonably well off, which means that he was drawing in business from a substantial hinterland. You know, you wouldn't be selling that many pianos in Yale, let's face it, you know, at any time. And then in 1886, it's much the same, but it's expanded more now because he has a bigger shop and he has curtains and dresses and flannels and all for dyeing, but he has carpets, hearth rugs and mattings and other furnishings. So it's expanded further as a department store. And of course, he's still doing the pianos for sale and for hire.
The business would continue to grow throughout the 19th century, leading to Merrick's expansion into adjacent buildings on North Main Street.
His son, Samuel, is a manufacturer and draper, and he's there 1886, 80 to 83. And then while I don't get any references to numbering thereafter, the S.J. Merrick, who was the one that really built the business up to the full extent from 1891 and in 1893. So his business continued to grow, and he appears again in 1907. He died in 1919. His son, also Samuel, took over the business, but it failed and he sold it in 1926.
Was bought by Richard Good, whose son Gordon would later go on to run Merrick's. Gordon would come to Yale to follow in his father's footsteps in 1954 at the age of 25.
The store had probably seven or eight different departments at that stage. It was a pretty big store. I suppose it was about 10,000 square feet or thereabouts at that stage of retail premises. And it was a very beautiful premises in many ways, but business was changing or beginning to change, and many of the aspects of their trading was not suitable for the developments that were taking place in the retail trade in Ireland. Much of the merchandise was stored on shelves behind glass. It was a sort of a one-to-one personal business where people came and bought. But the whole retail business, particularly the store business, the retail store business was changing in so much as that the type of display and merchandising of the things you were selling had to be put out and shown to the public. People had to be able to come in and see what you had to offer. We had to have open display as opposed to a one-to-one selling arrangement, which was almost what the old idea was of the retail trade. I can well remember, like, the development of places like Dunn's Stores, who were in Ireland, but who were developing their stores in Ireland. And this sort of concept, which had come, I suppose, from England, started in England and maybe on the continent, had come to Ireland. And that was the pattern for the future of the sort of retail trade. It was a business which wasn't going to survive without a very drastic change in the way they were trading. And my first feeling was that I was quite a young man, and many of the people who were working with me were my seniors. And I suppose I was conscious of that fact, but also conscious of the fact that I wanted to have their support in any changes that I was going to make in developing the business as I felt it had to be done.
The gradual transition of Merrick's into a modern department store would take several years, with a number of traditions lasting into the 1960s. Lil Dan, who would eventually take over the running of Merrick's in 1995, first came to the store in 1962.
Well, Merrick's was the town at the time. It really was. I mean, as you can see, it has seven windows along the front, and I mean, people would go downtown for a walk just to get out of the house, and they just went into Merrick's and they strolled around and went for a cup of coffee or whatever. But Merrick's was the centre of the town at the time, and at that stage you had two-way traffic. Gordon was trading on the ground floor only, and read and write was part of the shop as well at that stage. And there was a corridor going in between read and write and the main shop, and the doors used to be open back then during the day so they could walk from one to the other. He had everything. Everything, literally everything. He had haberdashery. He didn't have cosmetics. That was the one thing he didn't have. But he had a haberdashery. He had wool. He had ladies' fashions. He had menswear. He had furniture. You name it. He had everything. The one thing I will always stand out in my mind, well, there are two actually. When you went in the main door in Merrick's, the first thing you saw was this pot-bellied stove. And, oh, the heat out of it was something else, but that was the only heating they had in there. So you were inclined to converse around the stove, like. And then the cash system that they had in there as well, with these, you had Miss Field, she was an aunt of Bill Field's. She was up in the crow's nest just inside the door, and then you had these levers and these ball system for the cash. And people weren't in any rush at that time. You know, they seemed to have plenty of time to wait for their change.
A feature of Merrick's that was almost unique at the time was an intricate ball system running along a series of rails in the ceiling, which would ferry every transaction from each department to a central cash point.
Kids would come down, I mean, it was as good as Santa to them. They'd come down and they had to go into Merrick's to see these things working, like, you know, and if they were very small, they used to be stood up on the counter and they could pull the lever and watch the ball going all over the shop, you know. And at that stage, there was big high skylights there, and that's how they got the height. The parents, if they were shopping across the road in Pasley's, I mean, they had to come over just to let them see. I mean, it was a brilliant attraction for the children, really.
Townspeople and employees who grew up in Yall while the system was in place remember it fondly. Norman MacDonald worked in Merrick's in the 1960s and remembers the ball system from his childhood.
It was like a railway line. You used to put it in and it was spring-loaded. And you see, when you pulled it, it was like just pulling back a spring. And you shoot it up into the system. And then she'd shoot along and over to Miss Field, who was in the office. And then she'd undo it, take out the docket, put the money out in the change, pull it up, put it back. And there was one for each department, right? So each department, you know, so she knew exactly which department they were coming from. And of course, when you were small looking at it, it actually literally looked like an overhead train.
Liam Plant, who would work for Merrick's in the 1970s, also recalls the ball system.
What was fascinating to see these balls rolling along the top of the shop and down the slide into the particular department, you know. It was gravity operated. They put the ball into the slide and it went along through the roof of the shop and down into the office. And they had a track on the other side to bring the ball back with your change in it. I think at the time the idea was that they didn't have cash registers as such, and everything went into the office.
The ball system was inherited by Gordon Good when he took over Merrick's in the mid-1950s.
It worked on slope. The rails, the upper rail was slightly more sloping than the lower rail. They sloped in different directions. Therefore, the ball ran along. And even to the extent that at a junction where departments would meet, there were actually points. But the points were governed by the size of the ball which ran to whichever department it was going to. And a certain ball would go to the left and another one would go to the right, depending on the actual size or diameter of the cash ball that was running along the system. It was people called Lambs and Parrigan. They were an English company who made cash systems, and that was probably one of their very first. There weren't many of them. I do recall that the only other place that I think that system was working when I came here to Yall was, I think, Moon's in Galway, which is now part of the Brown Thomas store group. They were the only other people that I can recall at that stage that were running that system. It actually was very efficient, but very slow. But then I suppose we also probably packaged and parceled things more in those days than they do today. It wasn't as simple as just drop it in a bag and thank you very much.
Merrick's not only served customers from the town of Yall, but also traded with farmers from outside of the town during this period.
Merrick's used to buy the fleeces or wool from the farming community in the area. This was worked on the sort of basis that initially many of the farming community would buy merchandise from us on a credit basis. And when the full wool season came in, they would bring their fleeces and their wool into us and we would weigh it and price it. and we would pay them, and they would pay for the... It was like a barter system. It had to be weighed and graded, and eventually it was shipped to Bradford. We used to accumulate a lot of wool, and we had to have the lofts to store that wool before it was eventually put into tares and or into Eschen and shipped.
Norman MacDonald worked at Merrick's in the early 1960s and helped deal with the wool brought in by the farmers.
Well, the farmers used to bring in the bales of wool, and I'd have to weigh it, and then I'd go and get Mr. Good, who would judge the quality of the wool. I mean, I wouldn't have had the experience. He was excellent at, you know, he knew all the different wools, the quality of the wools, and then he'd settle a price with the farmer for the wool, and then it was my job to stack it, or if it was loose, I'd be putting it into bags after weighing it, you know, which was tough going.
I must say I developed quite an interest in sheep's wool at that stage, because I was able to judge the different grades of wool which used to be brought into us, because there was a lot of different... It had to be graded as well as just weighed and put into tares and sent off.
I can't remember anybody doing it other than Gordon, you know, so obviously it was by appointment only, nearly, you know. It was like going to the doctor to get your fleeces priced, you know. It was a genuine gift the man had to be able to handle the wool and tell you, you know, that's so-and-so, and so-and-so. It just was fantastic to watch him. And that was the fantastic thing about Gordon. He would know every detail and every iota that was going on in the shop. He was definitely very aware of his business.
I was shopping for a suit the other day and walked into the department store. Stepped on the elevator and told the girl, dry goods flow. When I got off, a salesman come up to me. He said, now what can I do for you? I said, well, go in there and show me all in sport clothes, like you supposed to.
Merrick's at this time traded on the ground floor. The upper floors of the building were home to the majority of Merrick's staff, who lived in up until the middle of the 1960s.
It was quite a practice in those days, particularly in the provinces. I think quite a few stores throughout the country had live-in staff. We had in Dungarvan. I know that there our Kilkenny connection also had. But it was reasonably common, particularly due to the fact that many of these people came from distance. I mean, they weren't necessarily all Yall people. There was people came from various parts of the country, and we used to advertise for staff, and people would come, and we could offer them accommodation. And it seemed to work very well. The female staff had their own quarters, and the male staff had their own quarters. They also had their own sitting rooms, that sort of area. But I mean, that didn't say that they didn't mix together. But I mean, I suppose in some ways it might be a little bit like a boarding school. I don't think we encountered too many problems, apart from the fact that it was a huge undertaking to have to sort of work out menus and sleeping arrangements and all that sort of thing. And it wasn't an economic proposition to go ahead doing it. Seeing what we were going to be left with then was two upper floors, if you like, where we had live-in staff. We began to look at the idea of, could we utilise this premises? And as our business expanded, we decided we could. Now, it did involve quite a lot of structural work, because, needless to say, a lot of the floors had bedroom areas and room areas and this sort of thing. But it gave us a great deal more trading area, and it certainly enhanced the store.
Marjorie MacDonald came to work at Merrick's as a 16-year-old in 1961.
I worked out that there were probably, when I first started, about 18 girls, women, living upstairs. And I imagine there were probably about 8 to 10 fellows. Certainly there would have been 8, I'd say, but there were about 18 girls. And you can imagine, like, literally sleeping, eating and working with them. You're talking about 24 hours a day, really, which could be tough enough, because I think I got on with most people fairly well. But you know, by the law of averages, especially when you have staff living upstairs together. We were living together, we were working together. And you're talking about a lot of teenagers. And, you know, it could be heavy going at times from that point of view. It was just one thing. Now, I mean, we have very fond memories of Chrissy, who worked in the kitchen. And you had Miss O'Brien, who was more or less, I suppose, in charge of the upstairs. They were lovely to us. They were lovely to us. We could have a little bit of a joke and a crack with them. I hope we were nice to them.
Typically for the period, Merrick's also ran an apprenticeship scheme, which would yield great benefits for both the store and the town of Yall.
People, in many cases, who weren't going on to secondary school in a big way, came and served an apprenticeship in sales and management and that type of thing. And 3 years, I think, was the term we used to specify. If we needed an apprentice, let's say in a men's fashion department or a linen department, depending on what it was, the apprentice would come and start under a buyer or a charge hand in that department, who would train him, first of all, in the sort of merchandise that was being sold and how it was sold, and then train him to meet people and how he should deal with people. And once they had done, let's say, 6 months in that, they would be probably sent along to the next department to train in that and eventually go through the different departments.
Marjorie MacDonald went through the apprenticeship scheme in the 1960s.
We were paid and we had our keep and were fed because we lived upstairs. Your first year, you got 10 shillings a week, and your second year, 15 shillings, and your third year, you got a pound. You didn't have very much money to go off buying things, and you didn't use Christian names, whereas everybody uses Christian names now, but you didn't. It was very formal. Even the juniors, if I remember rightly, we would have been called by our surnames. My maiden name was Ruddock, so I would have been Miss Ruddock. Looking back, I think it gave you a great grounding. You know, okay, you can say, well, there's surely only one way to brush a floor or take off covers and fold them. But you did it the correct way. You learned to deal with people.
Aileen Smith started as a 16-year-old apprentice during the same period.
Definitely it built my confidence. I was green, I was 16 years old, and I was a nervous wreck. At the end of the 3 years, lots of people will tell you, I was maybe getting a bit too big for my boots sometimes, but it did. It was great for my self-confidence, I must say. I was able to deal with the public. And any job I've gone for since, I always say I'm honest, I'm punctual, and I'm good with customers. 3 years in Merrick's was great training. And I mean, the people that lived in, they left home for 3 years. Very little money, but they had their keep. Made friends. That set them up for life.
They came in, they saw how it worked. They saw how it had to be done. And I think that was huge and hugely successful in their future development. I think that it was a marvellous way. I think it was very, very successful. And I think, indeed, when the apprenticeship system ceased, I think people were the poorer of it. I would say that it was a marvellous way of people getting a grounding and a knowledge of how business works.
As part of this programme, we spoke to some of the people of Yall about their memories of Merrick's.
Well, I suppose as a child, I used to go in there with my mother, and I remember the shops upstairs and the buzz that was in there, and it was fantastic, and it's a huge loss at the moment. I mean, it being closed, but I remember sent to there every year, and it was brilliant. There was a great buzz there all together, and I remember Gordon Good there and Lil Den then later on, and the staff. I mean, it was a huge there was huge employment there from the town, you know.
There used to be a lovely canopy outside the main door. Now, I'm not just sure where it is. It might be in the attic somewhere. But that used to be a very decorative one, and they used to be done up nicely in the wintertime as well with the lights and whatever, you know.
I love now going down there in the morning with him and looking in the window to see all the displays is in there. And it's a pity it is closed. It's a shame that someone didn't take it over. Like, it was the main store in the town, and there was everything in there. And it used to be lovely in there.
Gordon Good's takeover of Merrick's in 1954 coincided with the growth and expansion of Yall's textile manufacturing industry. Over the next few decades, the boom in this sector, and in particular the rapid rise of Yall Carpets, would have an enormous impact on Merrick's department store.
The boom in the carpet industry was probably, maybe, if anything, the biggest development that happened in Yall. I mean, I think I'm right in saying that Yall Carpets employed as many as 600 or 700 people here in this town. Now, that was a huge boost to the retail trade in this town. And we felt that, apart from the general trading, which improved enormously for us, it also meant that we could take advantage of the fact that people were beginning to take lino from their floors and put carpet down on their floors. We sold, amongst other things, furniture and carpets, and we needed a great deal of more extra space. And apart from the premises itself, Merrick's had a huge area behind the premises where there were stores and lofts and that sort of thing. And we almost doubled the size of the premises by building at the back of the premises at that stage. And we built it on two floors. When that started, of course, that gave us a great advantage because people used to come to Yall for carpets, and much of our trade was done it wasn't just confined to the Yall area. We got a lot of business throughout the country, throughout the county, and indeed many places where we used to make and fit carpets and sell carpets. And you see, Yall was a great, particularly in the summertime, Yall was a great meeting point for people. I mean, a lot of people came to Yall for their holidays. A lot of people passed through Yall, and it was, Merrick's was a sort of almost a meeting place where people could come and look. And I mean, that was very beneficial for us. And but by no means was confined to a town trade. We went much further afield, and particularly when the carpets came in, because Yall had a name for carpets and people came to Yall to look at carpet.
Liam Plant worked in Merrick's during the 1970s, starting as a driver in the furniture and carpet department.
By virtue of the fact that Yall Carpets was only around the corner from us, a lot of people bought carpet in Merrick's. They bought Yall Carpet there. We had a huge stock of Yall carpet, and at the time, like, it was very expensive. So I would hate to think of the value of the carpet that was there. It must have run into thousands of pounds at the time. People could actually furnish their whole house from Merrick's, from the carpet to the drapes, the furniture, you name it, we had it all. That job took us all over Munster. I mean, we fitted carpet in Cork, Waterford, Kilkenny, Carlow, you name it, and we done it. We done a lot of big jobs like hotels and that, bars. And also we delivered furniture as far as Dingle in County Kerry. So a lot of people came from the neighbouring counties to buy stuff at Merrick's. It was a kind of, I suppose it was prestigious to see Merrick's van outside your door.
Audrey Jackson first worked at Merrick's from 1963 to 1986.
I saw it progress and expand into a much more modern department store. As time moved on and fittings and fixtures progressed and became more modern, then everything was sort of expanding, and it really became a fine department store it got to the stage where we were competing with the supermarkets, which just started to come into being in the true sense of the word. But Merrick's really, really came on into its own.
The social side of working life at Merrick's was rich and vibrant, as Lil Dan recalls.
There was a big group there. And like, we, you know, we'd hire a minibus and go off to dances and things like that, you know. And there was such a big group there that you were never short of company, or there was always something going on. Like, I mean, we played tennis, we went for walks, we went to the pictures. I mean, that was our outing. We weren't, at that stage, you weren't in the pubs type of thing, you know. And the companionship was brilliant. It really was brilliant. And you had them then from all over. They were from West Cork, they were from the Midlands, they were from all over Ireland. And they were a great group, really.
The camaraderie of the staff would also lead to hijinks in the store itself. Magella Nolan worked full-time at Merrick's from 1973 to 1987.
Maurice McCarthy would have been there at one stage, who would have been a great character as well. He was always up to some trick or other. I remember going out one evening at 6 o'clock and putting my coat on and walking up the street, and I thought, I noticed people were looking at me. And eventually I kind of felt there was something dangling off the back of my coat, and Morris had tied on this plastic doll. So it was dangling and everybody was getting a kick out of it. Like, but I had walked up most of the street before I realised what was happening.
Helen Ahern worked at Merrick's throughout the 70s and 80s.
We had fun. Like, you might be going out some night and you go for your coat, you leave your coat in the hall. You might want to be in a hurry home. Next thing you discover, someone's after trying your coat to the banister. And you'd have to go back there. You might be the last off because you'd have to try and find the scissors to cut the coat off. But we did, like, they were enjoyable days. Very enjoyable.
The busy social scene and good relationships in Merrick's would play an important role in the creation of Yule Rugby Club, as Norman MacDonald explains.
Being the 50th year of the club and all coming up, you know, I don't know if we'd ever got the club going without them. There was very few people, obviously, in town that played rugby. But Merrick's had Dick Rusk, Eric Dan, Donald Mossop, Winston Greer, and of course then Sidney Howe and myself, six of us. But the point about it was is that we actually had a nucleus of six players to start off. And like, if you, when you got 15 fellas in a field and you've already got six of them, it's not that difficult to, you know, go and get other fellas. So the actual fact of Merrick's having so many people committed to playing rugby was the start that we actually needed.
Sidney Howe would become captain of Yule Rugby Club.
The rugby club was founded in November 1963. I was about a year in town. So I think it was November. And we're going to the first meeting. I knew nothing about rugby because I never played rugby. I played Gaelic football when I was younger. But Norman was kind of in Merrick's then, and he kind of talked a lot of us around to playing it. There was a few who had played it before, and there was another outlet for us on Sunday and for training during the week, so there was something else to do, like, you know. And I remember I was nearly bent from playing rugby because I came in one Monday morning to work and I had two lovely black eyes after getting the belt in the nose, and he says, "You'll have to pick it up," he says to me. And needless to say, I didn't.
The ladies in Merrick's actually were our fundraising committee. And like, you know, Lil Dan, Grace Jennings, you know, they were fabulous. Like, they went out, and I know Curry Hossford was involved with them as well. But like, we did fork and supper things, and we did little evenings here and there. And so that's the point I'm getting to you is, you know, there was people from Merrick's whose commitment to the rugby club was phenomenal.
Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married.
Another byproduct of a busy social scene and the friendships formed there will be the number of marriages between staff at Merrick's department store.
I mean, the number of weddings or partnerships out of that place. It's unbelievable. My friends in Dublin, Doris and Liam Jennings, they work there. Marjorie MacDonald and Norman, they worked there.
Leslie Snell, he got married to Evelyn Jennings, and Winston Greer got married to Kathleen Cunningham.
Oh, you have John and Lydia Mossop. She was working there when I was there. You had Maurice McCarthy, married his wife.
Well, Liam Ryan, obviously, who was presently our town clerk, and his wife Margaret. And I'm sure Liam won't mind me saying this, or Margaret either, but I think a few of us there, we had a hand in getting Liam and Margaret together.
One of the girls, her name was Carmel Fitzgerald. She got married to Trevor Nairn, who came from Sligo.
Frances Baker worked there. She got married to a Jennings, who wasn't working in Merricks. She met her husband through his sisters, because they were worked there. And of course, Eric and Lil Den, they met in Merricks as well.
Actually, he was in Merricks long before I went to work there. That's how we met, as lots of others. I suppose, you know, socialising and working together as, I don't know. But it worked anyway.
The highlight of the shopping calendar was an event that would draw customers from near and far, the Merricks Summer Sale. Sydney Howe started at Merricks in November of 1962 and worked there until the middle of the 1970s.
A lot of people from the city would be coming, and come from Waterford side as well, because it was all advertising the Cork Examiner at that time, and of course it was the paper, like, you know. And they'd all see what the value was. We'll have to go there, that was that attitude. So the sale used to be so busy, people come from Cork and everywhere, you'd have to close the doors and maybe keep it closed for half an hour for the people to mull out and go out again and let new crowd come in. There'd be a queue standing outside the door. I don't think you'd ever see that in y'all nowadays. We used to close from 1 to 2 for lunch. Sometimes you wouldn't be able to open up after lunch till about 2 past 2, because you had to fill up the stocks again for stuff to sell again. It was so busy.
Magilla Nolan started out at Merricks as one of the many people taken on temporarily during the summer sale.
It was amazing when I think back, because you would have queues outside the door. The queues would start maybe in an hour or so beforehand, and they would be at both sides of the main door, and only so many could be let in at a time, obviously. You know, it was incredible, really. It's like what you would have seen on television, where people queue up for sales in Dublin. That's what it was like. And I remember there were two ladies, they used to come the very first hour of the sale, and they would just run around quickly, and then they would just disappear across to Paisley's, the supermarket across the road, and say, oh, well, there wasn't anything there. They were famous for it.
Tom Slattery worked at Merricks from 1979 to 1981.
As a kid, I would remember them like in hundreds and hundreds of people. I can remember standing there with my mother, you know, and my aunt as well. I mean, people probably told me what it was going to be like, but you don't really know until you're stood there at the till, and there's just items coming from left, right and centre. Socks, trousers, suits, ties, shirts, everything. And they're literally queuing at the till, and you don't leave it because there's so much stock being sold. And you don't literally have the time to actually help customers with queries or anything like that. I mean, yeah, obviously, in the later days of the sale, it did get quieter. But for the first day or two, it was just bedlam.
Audrey Jackson initially worked at Merricks for over 20 years.
Very often, just after 9 o'clock, you see the first head running up the stairs. You know, the person running up the stairs to get their bargain, and they'd say, what size is the coat in the window, X amount of money, or whatever it was. And during the sale, if there was nothing wrong with the particular item, a coat or a dress, but it might be a bit slow to sell, it might still be there, so I'd say, if you sell that, I'll get you a bar of chocolate. Which seems very a pittance now, but it was just for the crack of it, really. And during the day then, of course, one of them would come up to me and say, you owe me a bar of chocolate, because they'd sell it, you know, which was good.
During the making of this programme, we spoke to some of the people of Yall about their memories of Merricks.
Yeah, it was to make shoes there. I know a man in Chapel Lane, he was a shoemaker, he worked there, he could make a shoe. He wasn't now like a cobbler repairing shoes, he could make one. He'd be related to the Swains here in Brown Street. Oh, that was way back now, my mother used to buy me the shoes.
they had gifts all around the whole shop, you know, for during Christmas. And I used to buy perfume and, you know, ties. So it was a very, very popular shop.
But I do remember Jackie Brooks, and he used to help anyone that couldn't pay their bills. He was very patient. He'd wait to see would they come, and Gordon Good. I don't know, I just remember, I have good memories of them.
It's a building that needs to be used for the same kind of function, I think. It'd be amazing just to have little units in there and have people doing their thing, rather than spreading outside the town and putting shops out on either side. It's because this town centre is fairly numb because of all the closures.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Christmas was a magical time at Merrick's. For many years, the toy department would only open in October for the run-up to Christmas. Aileen Smith worked in the department.
Mr. Good would have been off in Dublin doing his buying early on in the year, all this stuff for Christmas, and then he would ring me and say, you know, when can you start? We'll have to start opening up the toy department. So we went in and we'd stock it all up. And coming up to December then, Santa Claus would be arriving, and Santa Claus had to have parcels for the children. So we used to make up our own parcels. The base would be a book, and then little things you make up to the value of something, wrap it up in paper. And the days that I wasn't working, I'd be making parcels at home. And in the days I was working, if it was quiet, we'd all be making Santa Claus parcels in the shop while the kids were in school. Once the kids came from school, everything had to be put away. My two sons at home thought they had Christmas every day because every room in my house was full of Santa parcels. First of all, I'd have all the boxes with the stuff that had to go into the parcels, and then I'd have boxes with the parcels made up until he came to take them away. So my children thought I had a great house.
Christmas would also see the visit of Santa in his grotto.
I'd say Merrick's was the only Santa at the time, and he used to have this little grotto at the top of the stairs, all lit up and Santa inside, and kids coming up the stairs would be delighted. And you actually had to kind of pass the grotto to come to where the toys were. There was just another couple of steps. So they'd be all congregating on the steps, and we used to have to move them off the steps to leave the customers come up into the toy department.
The store itself would be dressed especially for the Christmas season. Helen Ahern worked in Merrick's for almost 20 years.
The windows were always decorated. The building itself was always decorated. We decorated. Everybody decorated their own apartment. But, the window was a big venture for Merrick's come Christmas. That's when you really advertised your merchandise. And you'd sell a lot of merchandise from the window. Whatever you put out, you could be replacing it maybe twice a day.
Lil Dan, who took over Merrick's in 1995, made a special effort to restore the magic of Christmas at Merrick's.
I always claimed that we had the real Santa, namely Mick Davis. He was absolutely brilliant with the kids and they loved him. He came in every way. He came by boat. He came by pony and trap. He came by helicopter to the Green Park. That was a big day in Yule. He came several years in the fire brigade, or the fire engine. I'm trying to think, he came by a motorcycle with a sidecar 1 year. We had difficulty getting him out of it, actually. it was great, really, you know. I mean, just even children used to come in just to chat to Santa, you know, and it was absolutely fabulous. And he was a great Santa.
Magella Nolan recalls Lil's efforts.
That would be in a time that you would have seen a queue right down to the front door and maybe out into the footpath, when the kiddies came to see Santa. And a lot of them would be second, third generation. That I can remember them coming in as children when I was there first time round, and now seeing them bringing their own children.
The grounding in all aspects of the retail business given by Merrick's to its staff would result in a number of employees branching out on their own.
Sammy Adams was the footwear buyer at that stage, and he subsequently married the fashion buyer and started his own shoe business in Yall. Sammy left and started on his own very shortly after I came to Yall, so it would have been, I would think, in the 50s, within 4 or 5 years, Leslie Snell was a footwear buyer with us for a while. He then went away and worked in England. Again, he married Evelyn, who worked with us. And then he subsequently came back and opened his own business here in Yall. George Kingston, definitely. George was also a buyer in Merricks, George Kingston, and he again married, and he started an auctioneering estate agent business here in Yall, and he was also a farmer as well, and he lived in Yall for many, many years. Down at the far end of the town, there was another drapery or shoe shop, Sweetnam's. Both of them worked in Merricks, both Herbert Sweetnam and Kay's wife. They both worked in Merricks. And I think his wife would have worked in the fashions there.
Helen Ahern worked at Merricks for 18 years, from 1970 to 1988.
Some of the girls now I worked with, for instance now, Mary Roach, she opened her own business in Middleton Specsavers. All I can think of now is Tina Healy. She had linen and lace business. She opened a business. She was the only another girl that I know of.
Jean Roach worked at Merricks for 7 years from the middle of the 1980s.
One of the people that I worked for when I started working in retail was Winston Greer. And Winston, he had a man's shop. I think I went to work for Winston in 1979. And he certainly had where he was from Sligo originally. And he married a very local girl, Kathleen Cunningham. Kathleen herself had worked there. Her sister Violet had worked there. But I think that's where they all got their break, was in Merricks, you know, so it's very historic in that sense.
Well, that was one of the perils or the problems of educating and training these people was that, I mean, one couldn't blame them. They were likely to start their own business because they felt that they were in a position to, they knew the trade, they knew what was necessary to run their businesses, and I suppose from our point of view, they had received the necessary knowledge to know how to go about it.
Hundreds of people have worked in Merricks down through the centuries, with many leaving their mark in more ways than one. Dara O'Donnell, who worked at Merricks for a short time, now works as a manager at the Read and Write store, which was originally a part of Merricks.
They decided to open up a gift gallery upstairs in 2006. So they refurbished upstairs, which would have been Merricks flats and garden goods office originally, and old storerooms. And during that time, they came across some signatures of former staff members of Merricks. 1916 was the earliest date that I came across. There was at least 20 signatures there, and some of the signatures I would have heard of because my father worked in Merricks years ago. He used to be a carpet fitter for Merricks. I remember ringing Mr. Good, and he came in, and there was a write-up on the local paper at the time. Gordon enjoyed it. He enjoyed it, and for each name, he could tell a story of where they were now, or what happened, or what department they worked in. So he had all the history, and it was really, really interesting.
The other thing that sort of fascinates me when I looked at that sort of graffiti was, and this is something that sort of many times I've said, and that is, I only wish that I had kept a staff register, because, I mean, I would love to know how many people during my 35 years passed through that shop. I mean, it was huge numbers of people, you know, used to come. And indeed, even to this day, I meet people that come to me and say, I worked in Merricks. Sadly, I suppose it's my vintage, but I don't remember a lot of them. You know, looking back, I think I feel sort of that it would have been lovely to have had a record of all the people who passed through. But there are probably three or four people stick in my mind who were the sort of senior staff when I walked into Merricks. I mean, I suppose Kit Field, as a bookkeeper, probably was one of the first. I'm trying to think what the department was called in those days. It would have been sort of hosiery, haberdashery, that type of thing. It was run by a Miss Pasley, who was also one of the old staff from Merrick's. There was a man in charge of the menswear department called Johnny Johnston. And particularly, I can remember because he died while I was there. It was a man called Price who ran the linen department. And there are funny things about all of them I could tell you that, you know, I can remember Miss Pasley, as we was called in those days. Most of the junior staff used to play tricks on her and all sorts of things. But, I mean, she took it all with a good grace and that sort of thing. Price was a bit of a character in so much as that he had his own method of selling and salesmanship, some of which I would approve of, others perhaps not. Johnny Johnston, all I can say is that he was a far better Christian than I was, if I remember rightly. And Kitfield really was one of the pillars of Yall, if you like. She lived down over the shop where her brother was a printer and worked for many, many years there. But those are four names that will always stick in my mind, and I have the greatest respect for them because I know what it must have been like for somebody like me to walk through a door and sort of say, "Lord, where did this fellow think he's, what does he think he's going to do?" And I mean, there was a sort of a situation that Merrick's had to change, and Merrick's did change. It wasn't all due to me. A lot of it was due to the staff that worked with me and that type of thing. But we did trade very successfully, and we were still trading very successfully the day I sold the business.
Gordon Good would retire from Merrick's in 1989 after 35 years of running the store. The business would continue under new ownership until 1992, when it closed for 9 months. Merrick's was then reopened by O'Shea's of Middleton with a new way of doing business. Lil Dan returned to Merrick's during this period.
Merrick's had reopened in the guise of different units within Merrick's. It still looked a department store, but there were different unit holders in there. But it was still an open store. And I went back for three afternoons, actually, a week. Then it snowballed into a sort of 6 days a week. I got sort of clued into the business again. And we were just, one of the girls, we were chatting and, you know, said we'd love to sort of have our own business type of thing. And anyway, we took over the ladies' fashions and cosmetic department. We had that for a year, and we realised then that the business wasn't succeeding as it should be. It came up anyway that the place was going to close, and we had, as I said, the cosmetic department and the fashion department and the other unit holders. They more or less persuaded me that, you know, while I was in the office, I knew the runnings of the place, and, you know, would I not sort of take it over? And at that stage, having sunk so much money in the cosmetic and the fashion department, I thought, well, you know, we'll give it a go. And it worked fine for years.
Magella Nolan came back to work for Lil Dan, having worked full-time for 14 years under Gordon Good in the 70s and 80s.
It was still very, very good. There's no getting away from it. Certainly for a good number of years when I was there, business was good. And it was, and we had a good variety of stock. You know, business was good. I suppose you could see it then in the latter years, like it began to fall back a little bit, like as the economic climate changed.
A number of former employees would return to Merrick's during the last two decades, including Marjorie MacDonald, who had first worked there in the 1960s.
I must have come back to Merrick's in 2005-06, and I left just shortly before the household department closed up. I again had some very happy times back there. I was working for Lil. I knew the department was going to close and I was coming up to retiring age, so the whole lot sort of fell in together, really. Things had gone quiet. It was the start of things going quiet in general, and that was sad to see.
I think the downturn of Merrick's was traffic was a problem. There was no parking in town, and Pasley's then across the road, they moved. And that was the death knell, really, of the centre of the town, because people came downtown on Friday, Saturday shopping, and they did Merrick's, they did Paisley's, and they did the Coffee Pot. That really was the death knell. I mean, you could see a vast drop in footfall once Paisley's moved downtown. Further on then, 2007, the bottom dropped out of the economy completely, the retail end of it. And the unit holders moved to the new industrial estates because of the parking. They had more parking in these places. And I wasn't able to get anybody to take over the space because it is a big store and the floor area was big. And people weren't interested in coming to take over. I had a few, but they found that the traffic and the parking was the big problem. So I ended up just being on my own there. And, I mean, it was 12,500 square feet is the space there. And it just became, it wasn't viable to run it. I mean, rates were enormous as the rent was astronomical. So we just couldn't afford to keep running it any longer because it just wasn't profitable to do so.
Merrick's closed its doors in January 2011. As of the date of broadcast of this programme, the store still remains shut.
It was ready for anybody to walk in and start up a business, you know, and I was hoping against hope somebody would. I'm in the All for All group, and we got around some of the business people in the town to take a window. And at least it doesn't look a blank window now, because I left curtains at the back of it because I said nothing would drive me mad more than just driving to the town and seeing a blank window and nothing, you know, looking into an empty shop. But this was a great idea, to get the business people. And it's good for them and it's good for the town not to be looking at seven blank windows. There has to be somebody out there that has the incentive and the energy and the money to put into it, you know, because things have gone down as much as they can. They're not going to get any worse. They have to get better.
When I started at 16, I was terrified going into Merrick's. Merrick's built me to who I am today. It really did. All my life it stood to me. My look back at Merrick's is all good. I have no bad memories in Merrick's.
I was young then. We had a great old time. And I made great old friends there, and friends we still have, I suppose, and we'll always have for life.
It is sad to see such a fantastic building going derelict. It was a landmark in Yall. You could buy anything in Merrick's department store.
For a town their size, it was just huge. I mean, you've seen that yourself in the number of people that you've actually interviewed, you know, that have worked there. And you've only interviewed a handful of the people that actually did work there. And, I mean, we're going back over hundreds of years. It's just as big a part of the fabric as the town walls. And it's part of the story of Yall.
And I think it's true, too, of the multiples today and the bigger stores. A lot of that personal touch is lost. I mean, it's all business-orientated now. It's figures-orientated. It's profit. It's everything like that. It's all balance sheet stuff now. I don't think I'd like to go back into something like that. No.
It's got the most wonderful windows. It's such an old building and has a lot of character and a lot of history. And to see it empty now, I think it's really sad.
You know, it was always, in my opinion, a store that was probably far too large for a town of Yall's size, yet it worked. It worked because of the outside support that we got, as well as the support in Yall. And whether that sort of situation has a future, I just don't know.
I thoroughly enjoyed every hour I spent there. And I'd say if you go through any of the girls now that work there, they will be the same. Even friends of mine, when they come back, you know, they say, oh, think of all the good times we had in there, you know. So hopefully it will open again, you know, at some stage.
Merricks is a production of Community Radio Youghal. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.